welcome to everybody. The first thing I'd like to do is to just give you a very broad overview of the course. There's three primary focuses in this course. The first focus is what I would call a connecting to our authentic life energy, that life force that is inherent in everything that we do. And I'll talk about some of the underlying principles as a way of orienting to this consciousness. And for me, it's an embodied living experience and not so much the conceptual framework, although the conceptual framework can help us to connect to the living experience of it. The second focus has to do with how we approach ourselves in compassion, compassionate embrace, self-compassion that allows the energy, when it's held in woundings or held in reactivity, to transform. And then the third focus is compassionate mutuality, has principles of how we can bring living compassion and living authenticity into the space of relationship in mutuality. And so what I'd like to do is start with a very brief kind of opening attunement meditation. What I'd like to do is just ask everybody to intend to become present and just start by perhaps closing your eyes if that works for you. Bringing your attention to your breath. To allow yourself to slow the pace down and to pause with your attention on your inner world. And as you're bringing your attention to yourself, you simply scan and bring a gentle awareness to all of the experiencing internally. Just notice the body and the sensations. Notice any emotional feelings that you're feeling internally. Perhaps there's a holding or tension, constriction of some kind. Just allow it to be there. Notice if there's any thoughts or story or narrative going on in your mind. You have pictures or images of something. Just notice those. And just take some breaths and create the intention simply to be present to your own authentic life force, life energy as it lives in you. Thank you. What I'm going to do is to start out by a reading. And I always like to begin courses with an expression, a reading that articulates and expresses the spirit, the essence, or the underlying consciousness that I see as the foundation for this work. This poem is called Here. It's written by a woman named Dana Faulds. It's always here, the silent underpinning, the foundation beneath the foundation, when I reach deep enough into darkness, inside fear, self-doubt, aversion, or despair, there's something so intact, I almost miss it in my focus on brokenness. It's always here, this ground of being. Like the water in which fish swim, it's easy to overlook the eloquence of truth. It's here, this guiding presence, this calm, abiding stillness. It's here when I don't try to make life any more or less than what it is. When I stop trying to be right, it's here when I unclench my fists and breathe, when I let go of the demand to make life smooth or easy. It's here, the oneness underlying multiplicity, the exquisite isness of everything. I could shout it from the rooftops, but it's true no matter what I say, and I know you'll find it in your own time, your own way. That precious moment when you choose to meet life exactly as it is. Just a brief moment of silence, just to notice what you're feeling in taking this reading in. Okay. What I would like to do in this first class of the six classes is to share with you what has become clear to me over the many years I've done this work. And I'm going to share with you what I consider the core principles of this work, which it's the underlying, I guess, consciousness or foundation that holds the context of what this is all about. For me, these core principles are important. I don't present them as a belief or something I'm asking you to believe in, but if they resonate with you, asking you to just hear them as perhaps an experiential context within which everything that we do, it actually carries a kind of intention or orientation. And having said that, I want to say that for me, the context of all of this work and these core principles has to do with a fundamental orientation to life, that orientation in which it's always oriented or pointed or intended towards aliveness and livingness and the fundamental life force, the underlying beauty of everything. Each one of them, I think, has profound implications, so they're just it's just a brief summary of the principles of this work. So the first one is there's only one life energy, one life force. Life force is all-encompassing, permeates all of life on all levels. The many names or labels that different individuals, traditions have given to this life force, but for the sake of what I'm going to share, I'm just going to call it the life force that is in and permeates everything. The second principle is this life energy or life force moves in every aspect of life. It manifests in life, on the physical world, biological world, in the human world. And focusing on the human dimension, it moves in and through every human being. So that means that every action, everything that human beings say and do is an expression of this life energy. And the life energy manifests through the human heart as longings and yearnings for particular qualities. These longings and yearnings manifest as universal human needs, as those qualities that all human beings value. The third principle is that all suffering results from the obstruction of this life flow. And a primary part of what I call suffering is a function of life-alienating thought and language. Out of certain life experiences, we create these protective and survival structures that we identify with, that is basically the core belief in our own separation, out of which the language of right and wrong, good and bad, the fundamental language of judgment, comes from this basic obstruction to the life flow. And principle number four is compassion liberates the energy caught in the suffering. So when we bring compassion to our own inner life, to that space and relationship where there is basic disconnection, life alienation that I'm calling suffering, bringing compassion to life releases and transforms basic life held in that so that it can manifest in life. And then the fifth principle is that when this life energy is liberated, when we are in touch with this life force as it authentically lives in us, it naturally moves out into life, reaching for communion, expressing creatively, living in joy, love, service, compassion, and basically living in a kind of a flow of life itself. So those are the five principles. Again, I said they're rather simple, but they have, for me, very profound implications. So I'm going to pause there for a moment and just check with anyone who has any response, any resonance, maybe wanting clarity for what I've shared. Lauren.
I just thought I'd share a resonance with the last principle that I've noticed in my past. I've had a story about that I don't really like to serve or that I'm selfish. And then when I've been surrounded by people connecting with me compassionately, I find myself really energized to wash the dishes or contribute in whatever way comes up.
Yeah.
That's a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thanks, Lauren, for sharing that. I have a similar experience in different ways. But for me, the experience is it's a natural moving out. I don't have to try. It's just a natural desire that comes from a particular kind of connecting with that compassionate life. Thanks, Lauren. I appreciate hearing that. I believe these principles are, for me, they're very important, and I like to remember them. And it's something that I can make available to you all who'd like to make reference to them for the rest of the course. So, Dee, how about if you'd like to say something?
I loved hearing the third principle, and I didn't quite get it, but there was like a kind of a ring or an aha about how language alone can obstruct the life flow.
Yes.
I assume you're going to be talking more about these, but I just wonder if you could say it again. I'd like to try to rehear it.
Yeah. Again, it's very simple, so it's understandable that you or other people may want clarity. But the essence of it is what I'm calling suffering is the kind of experience that we have when we're in a kind of distressing emotional pain. In NVC, one of the ways we characterize it is that when we're in this life-alienating jackal consciousness, whether we are judging ourselves or judging other people, when we do that, we experience a distressing emotional and physical experiences. And we're tight and we hold ourselves in the distressing pain, in fear or anger or something like that. So for me, that's what I call suffering. And when we're in that suffering, we're actually blocking the flow of life. When we receive compassion, either through self-compassion or compassionate empathy from someone else, we're able to relax because the essential life that we're feeling, our authentic feelings and needs, are heard. And we can relax and allows the flow of that, which is a form of healing or the transformation of that suffering state. And a primary element in suffering, in this sort of contracted, distressing experience, is the life-alienating language and thought that we participate in. So I'm wondering, does that clarity help?
Yes, thank you. I just appreciate restating that. It was just really lovely to hear. Thank you.
Yeah, great. Great. Rio.
I noticed that in the past when I was looking for those obstructions or constrictions of the life force that I was focusing on unmet needs, and recently I've noticed that when my needs are met, sometimes there's also a constriction that I don't fully allow the experience of joy or love or pleasure. But that can be, even though it's essentially a happy experience, that it's not a full release into the life flow. And so that's interesting to explore as well.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, acknowledging that, Rio. I find that in my own experience at times, and I've heard many people share that. So for me, the principle is that I understand from what you're sharing is that our capacity both for joy and to fully encompass and embrace our pain is often restricted, and they're related to one another.
Yeah, and it seems sometimes even more liberating to focus on when needs are met and fully releasing the joy. That gives me more energy to focus on those situations.
Yeah.
It gives more energy to address the unmet needs as well.
Yeah, so, and in this work, what that reminds me to say is whether needs are met or unmet, the primary focus of our energy and consciousness is on the quality of the need, on the fullness of the need, whether it's met or unmet. And both of those experiences, for me, there is a flow or a radiance in those. So when it's unmet, I can mourn them with authentic mourning. When they're met, I celebrate them. But both of them, there is a quality of aliveness and flow without the holding them back or tensing and holding the energy in.
Yeah, they both situations seem like an excellent way to connect with that essence. You know, both the situations where it's met or unmet.
Yes.
They both have that possibility of really getting to the quality, the essence.
Exactly.
Thank you.
I see another hand. Karma?
I believe you have just answered the question that I wanted to put, because I was very curious about this thing that you said about the suffering being somehow linked to the life-alienating thoughts and language.
Yes.
And I was wondering, is it possible to have sufferings that are never linked to, not at all linked to a life-alienating thought, and then, of course, develop this connection with the needs? And what I understand is that we could say that there are two kinds of suffering. No, one could be a mourning, which even if we have our net needs, we are connected to our needs in a way that our life is still flowing.
Yes.
Or we can have a net needs and be really alienated or dissociated from ourselves, causing a suffering that I would say is alienated from life.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with the experiences. However, to avoid confusion, I make a distinction with how I define suffering is the life alienated form of that. And the other part, mourning, I call that natural pain or natural mourning. There's a flow and it's connected to the actual life energy of our needs. So I just use the terminology in specific ways.
I understand, and thank you very much.
Great. Okay. So I think I'd like to shift into the other part that for me emanates from these principles. And I think the way I would regard this would be, there's two, I think I would call them intentions for a living practice. The two essential aspects of these five principles is there is, in any moment of our life, we are, say, in the flow of life. We are celebrating. We are in the flow, in the radiance, connected to our authenticity. Or we are in some form of constricted pain or suffering, some way of tensing or holding in the life force. Now, I'm aware that we can have experiences that have perhaps combination of both of those or elements of both of those in any one moment. But for the sake of distinction, what I want to do is name that we can be in the life flow, we can be celebrating, we can have this an experience of aliveness in joy and play and warmth, all the different forms. Or we can be in an experience of suffering, which is a held in, distressing, painfully disconnected way of being. So the first intention would be for me to live in the fullness of that life flow, to live with the passion of that life flow. And when it's not there, to then bring compassion to my life experience, whether it's within myself or in the relationship. So the two principles are I live with passion and I live with compassion. And they both, for me, are a very simple way of how I can orient my whole life moment by moment. So I live with the aliveness of the life force, with the passion of it, and when it's not fully there, I bring compassion to my experience. So those two principles for me express a very simple orientation to my life experience, and they're the foundation of this work. So far what I've shared are these five core principles and these two primary intentions. And I'd like to hear if anybody would like to say anything in hearing these two primary intentions, maybe need for clarity or want to share any experience with hearing them. Jeff.
I'm really overjoyed to hear that simple But there's two intentions to work on, and one is passion, and the other one is compassion. Those are two that are very essential for me, and they really speak loudly to where I am and what I've been working on a lot in the last few years. And
yeah,
I really sense this passion of being alive and being full of energy and life. That's what I want most to bring out in myself. And then when I'm not there, is just to hold myself largely with as much compassion as I can.
Wow. Thank you, Jeff. Really, really enjoy hearing that. Okay. What I would like to do now is to invite you all to engage in an experience, an exercise. I'm going to guide everyone in the same process. So everybody's going to bring your awareness into your inner experience. A short guided meditation right now. I'll ask each person to bring your awareness to the inner experience that's going on with you right now. Whatever your inner experience is, bring your attention to this. Just know that with this process, there's really nothing to do or to accomplish with your inner experience other than simply to notice and be with it in an allowing manner. Simply allow it. And gently breathe as you are bringing your awareness to your inner experience. And feel what is going on in you as life. Only life. A life impulse. A life feeling. Just sense or try out this perspective that this life impulse doesn't belong to you. It's simply flowing through you. This life impulse, the life feeling that you're feeling. The same life that flows through everything and through everyone. It is life itself. And in feeling this life energy in you, flowing through you, you just allow it to be whatever form it is in, whether you label it pleasant or unpleasant, good or bad. You just allow the space for this feeling simply to be as it is. So regardless of the content of your inner experiencing, feel it as simply life energy. This is a space of inner compassionate presence. Now imagine yourself to be in a sphere, a container of compassionate presence, held, cared for, in a field of unconditional acceptance. In your experience, notice what your experience looks like. If it has colors, shapes, images, does it have a texture? Notice if in this sphere of compassionate presence, notice how you feel. What is your emotional feeling? Allow yourself to keep breathing and allowing whatever is there in your experience. Notice your physical sensations. Just allow them to be whatever they are without trying to have them be any other way. thoughts, your feeling, your inner experience. Just allow it to move however it wants to move, with an inner spaciousness of allowing and unconditionally accepting. Just be with your inner experience, whatever it is, accepting whatever is there. And then I'm going to ask each person to take a couple of deep breaths. Thank you, everybody, for taking the time to do this process, this exercise with yourself. I would like to take the next period of time to just open it up so for any sharing. And the sharing, I'd love to hear whatever is there in your sharing, anything that you enjoyed that was insightful or moving for you, in addition to anyone that had any difficult connecting to the experiences I was guiding you through it, or any other form of sharing. I'm very eager to hear it. So I'll open it up to sharing for right now, and when you are ready, you can raise your hand. Okay, there is Sarah, and then Daryl after Sarah. Sarah, I'd love to hear.
I found that the internal experience that I was having was, I was torn because I was very settled in my body and really found it hard to remember what you were saying, in a sense, because my mind was so active. So I felt that I was in two different internal states with a very active mind, but actually my body was quite still, and I can remember very little of the instructions that you were giving, but I have a sense of it actually in my body.
Oh, okay, interesting. So you had two different focuses, very
yeah.
active mind at the same time. It doesn't sound like your active mind was affecting the internal state of your body. It sounds like you were maybe relaxed and present. Is that accurate?
Yes, very, very present in my mm-hmm. body, but and consciously aware of how active my mind was too. So
yes.
there's a sort of two dimensions to it.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Great. Is there anything else you wanted to share?
No, it's just great being part of this series. Thank you for organizing it, Robert.
Great. Thank you, Sarah. Okay, so the next we have Daryl, and then
yes.
D after Daryl.
There was a phrase that you said that really was very profound for me, and that's when I think you were talking about the life energy or the life force, and you
yeah.
said it does not belong to me.
Yes.
And
yes.
in that moment, that was so liberating. So I think that was a really important part for me.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I'm very pleased to hear that. I think that in me, that the experience that I share by using those words for me is very profound. It helps me to let go of some kind of holding when my mind thinks that this life energy is personal in a sense. And if that makes any sense to you.
It does, yeah.
A non-personal life force actually moving in and through me.
Then it's almost as if I'm just being present to it, and it's guiding me to the next
yes.
whatever I need to be present to. So
I love that. Yeah, that very much fits my own experience. There's something very and very profound about this way of coming to our inner experience for me. And it's something that can be an ongoing way of attuning ourselves to our own life force. Yeah. Thank you, Daryl. I see Dee, you have your hand up.
I also want to comment on that phrase that it doesn't belong to me. I had a very visceral experience of that because I was having a hot flash just at the time he said that. It was kind of amusing to even go to the thought that it doesn't belong to me, but it did definitely point me to the whole life energy of the female body and reproduction and life itself. And I noticed how much suffering I allow myself around being pissed off that I have this condition. And
yeah,
I definitely felt a lessening, a releasing of that. Not, I don't know, totally. I'll have to wait for the next one to see, but it was,
it was
almost amusing to think that how much I think it's me.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I'm really, really enjoying hearing that, Dee. Something shifted in you when you heard that phrase in terms of your experience of your body.
Right.
Yeah.
The suffering I've kept around this whole experience that I could easily let go of.
Yeah. I'm imagining that it makes it hard for you to be compassionate for your experience, compassionate to yourself in whatever you're going through in this transitional experience that you're going through with the hot flash and this the energy that you go through with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, this is a very profound thing in terms of our relationship to our bodies. It reminded me of a transformational experience I had about a year and a half ago with my own body. And the experience I had was this was unplanned and never had the thought before, but I had the experience of my body being like an innocent animal, that my body does not belong to me, but that it's a gift to me as it walks with me in this lifetime. And it allowed me to really deeply mourn all the things I've done to my body. I would never treat an innocent, beautiful animal the way I've treated my body. And it was very transformational to me to approach my own body as this living being that is an absolute gift from life itself. Just your sharing re-stimulated that memory of how I can approach my own body with profound compassion and to serve the life that's in my body's impulses.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dee. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to share with you the words, very roughly expressed, of this, the two parts of this guided meditation. And my suggestion is that you practice this on a daily basis as part of this course. So I believe that the more you practice this, and there'll be other practices as well, that it's really going to support your integration of this material, because this is foundational integration experience. So my suggestion is you practice it as best you can and trust your own life energy so that if some of the words don't exactly fit, that you can adjust it to what fits for you. I do view that this work of connecting to our deep authenticity compassionately and then communicating from this space is really implies a life practice, a spiritual life practice, so that we come to it on a regular basis, like we would be engaged in a meditation practice. So my suggestion is you all take this as a regular practice. And I think that's all I wanted to say on that. I think I want to also say this another couple of thoughts on how life energy expressed as our life longings, our yearnings. There's a couple of differentiations that I want to make. Is they often use terminology like our heart's longings or what we deeply yearn for. And for me, I want to make a distinction between our longing and seeking. The way I define longing and yearning, those two words, are an expression of those qualities that emanate from our heart, the kind of qualities that we yearn for in our life. We yearn to be authentic. We yearn to be fully alive, and the heart yearns for honesty and authenticity and love, creativity, non-judgment, compassion, those qualities that uphold life. So my experience and my sense of these longings is that it's something that goes into the heart and doesn't go out into the future. For me, when we're in our mind in a seeking mode, we go out into the future seeking something, and seeking always comes from a present state of lack or felt lack. So when we're in a state of deficiency or feeling that we have some kind of emptiness inside, the mind goes out externally to find some sort of external stimulus or experience to fill or to fit what is basically an internal lack or deficiency. So that's what I would call the process of seeking. And for me, it is a function of suffering. It's a function of living in a separated state, in experiencing our inner life as somehow fundamentally lacking. And to draw the distinction further, longing and yearning is not an experience of emptiness, it's an experience of fullness. So that if I am experiencing in the NVC language an unmet need, someone may say something to me that did not fit my intention. So I may say, my need for understanding and being seen isn't fully met here. So I can come at that experience from an experience of deficiency or lack, or I can come at that experience with an experience of fullness. When I touch into the beauty of understanding, the longing of how I long to be seen accurately. So that distinction is something that's very important for me, and it's important in this work when we talk about the beauty that's inherent in our needs. And when we are connected to needs, whether they're met or not, it's the connection to this fullness, to the radiance of our needs. So that's one point I wanted to make. Again, you know, so much of what I'm sharing in these little experiences for me are just a preliminary touching into this inner territory and this inner practice. So each one of these things, the principles and the exercises and the processes, they are an introduction to this. They're showing the way of this inner territory that we can come to over and over again and then deepen our experience and further clarify so that we can be more fully connected to our inner experience. I think what I'd like to do is just share one other thought that's been helpful to me, and then I'd like to just do another short exercise, a guided exercise, a partnered exercise, actually. It's not so much a guided one, and I'll describe what the exercise is in a moment. But there's one other observation that I've had that's been helpful to me, and I just thought I would share it with you. It's this is probably not new information, but it's helped me to look at this in terms of compassionate living, living according to the values that NVC shows us, is that when I observe my life, I notice that there are just these primary areas of my life. And it's really helpful for me to identify them, for me to fully accept all areas of my life and live in a balanced way. So the primary category, which is I consider to be the foundation of all of it, is the category of my own inner life, the dimension wherein my intention is to live with self-compassion and self-care, to cultivate the inner life. So for me, this is a foundational dimension of life. And then the other one are three primary dimensions of how I focus, and they can be interwoven. They aren't necessarily discrete compartments in my life, but there are dimensions of it. The one I would call the dimension of love. It involves all my relationships. When I'm in the field of relationship, the area of regarding my interactions with the intention that all needs equally matter, intimate relationships, friendship relationships, it's that dimension where I cultivate mutuality, cultivate mutual care. And I notice that when I have this as a primary intention in my life, that relationships are one of the highest values for me. I can bring my authenticity into relationships as a dimension of life itself. Another dimension is what I would just call work. What is the meaningful activity in my life? I spend a lot of time in this dimension of my life's work. And work can mean anything. One is my primary life's work, and this that I offer you and I do in many different areas of workshops and gatherings that I hold with people. It's a completely very specific category in how I focus my life energies. It's the area of work. It can be formal or informal. I work when I'm at home and I'm doing my work at home, whatever that might entail, whether I'm paying bills or cleaning the floor or shopping or working in the yard. for me, all of this is work. And it has a sense of purposefulness in my life. So those primary themes. Another area is what I would call play. And that can be pretty encompassing. Play can be anything where I support that energy in me to relax, to engage in leisurely activities, to sort of relax everything and just play. I mean, I think the word itself says a lot. So I'm just for me, I think it's important for me to identify that these are three very major dimensions of my life force, how my life force manifests in my relationships, in my work world, and in the world of play. So I thought I would just share that perspective that's helped me to view my life and how I live and express all of my life energies always fall into at least one or more of those dimensions of life. So I'd like to do another short exercise, a short process. What I'd like each person to do is to focus on some minor inner, well, when I say inner or outer obstruction or some blockage in your life. In other words, it could be some challenging situation externally that stimulates an internal fear, loneliness, disappointment, distress. It doesn't have to be big. Just for the sake of the exercise, my suggestion is you choose something that has, that it's real, but has a lower level of intensity. And what I'd like each person to do is to imagine experiencing this internal feeling, to get in touch with the actual visceral feeling, the bodily felt tightness, obstruction or not, and to bring a compassionate presence to this obstruction, to bring an atmosphere or an intention of just allowing it to be there, just allowing whatever it is to be in your experience. So even as I'm describing it right now, I ask you to do this. Make that minor, lower level of intensity, something that's real, something you found challenging, stimulates fear, anger, loneliness, disappointment, and bring an unconditional acceptance and allowing to that inner life. Just allow yourself to breathe with whatever sensations are there in you. Notice any thought or story you're telling yourself about the experience. Notice if there's any self-judgment or judgment of the other person. Just bring your attention to the life energy in the inner experience that's stimulated by the outer stimulus of something. Notice if there's any thought of your wanting this painful experience to end or to shift or to go away. Any thoughts like that are a form of resisting the experience itself. Self-compassion is self-empathy, and empathy and compassion doesn't try to change, but simply allows the inner experience to be. And if in this inner experience, sense and feel if there is a longing or a yearning energy in the pain itself, longing for something. Allow yourself to feel the longing in your body. And now, staying connected to this experience. I would like to open it up for anybody to share. Just any sharing of your experience again. I'd love to hear how that was for you, any insights or any challenges in that process. But also if you have any questions or need for help or support in your experience with this kind of a process, I'd be very happy to offer that. Again, I'd just open it up for anybody to share. Kathleen, love to hear it.
So I brought the experience of my chaotic work environment that I really struggle with and have been very aware recently of my anger and frustration and how that, I experience that in my body is great tension in my chest. So was re-experiencing that, and when you suggested bringing compassionate presence, I was really actually quite annoyed and had a hard time. You know, I kind of was railing against that, like how can I possibly bring compassionate presence to this? But I imagined, you know, kind of a large container holding all of my bodily experience and my emotions. And when you suggested, was there a longing there? The word that came for me was a longing for order, and that it also had a, felt like a deeper resonance of like a child's, my child's need for order, which was an insight that was brand new.
Yeah, yeah. When you say my child, meaning the inner young
my
you.
Inner child, yeah.
Yes, yes.
Was just so, order in this moment in my work life.
So I want to stay with you on this, Kathleen, because there's very some important distinctions that in this work I find support the work. The one is that you described the chaotic work environment, which is external stimulus, things that other people are doing in the environment. That would be what could be called the stimulus. And then the, what that stimulates is the inner experience that you hold inside of you in relation to that chaotic work environment. We heard you say anger and frustration and then tension in your chest. That's the point of the focus. It's so easy for us to think of the outer thing as the problem, that if only they change outside, I'll be okay inside.
Right. I've tried that. It doesn't work.
Yeah, and it doesn't work usually because if we're angry or annoyed, the energy we approach other people with just makes things worse, or it just simply doesn't help. So the point I want to make, not just for you, but for everyone hearing, is that it's the inner experience that creates our suffering. It's not the outer people that are just making our life hell. And so approaching that is part of this inner practice. And it takes a while. I think I do understand the part of you that felt annoyed and has a hard time doing it. Because isn't it true that the part of you that felt annoyed, I'm just guessing here and see if it's accurate, doesn't want your anger and frustration to go away, because it's pointing to something important.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Your anger and frustration, this is a point I want to make for everyone. There's a principle and a practice that every inner reaction, every painful contraction, anger, annoyance, or something, is actually the expression of a longing. Mm-hmm. It's actually the life energy in you longing for something. When I talk about longing, it's not longing for an outer circumstance. It's longing for an inner spaciousness, the inner life, to be felt in a certain way. So that Kathleen, when you said longing for order, that could be an outer order or the inner order that you feel when the environment is in a particular sense of order as you perceive it.
Yeah, it brings up sadness for me.
Yeah. I'd love to hear what the sadness is about.
My sense is that it's my growing up in a very, I've never made this connection before, but
yeah.
Growing up in a very chaotic home environment, and that just this really deep longing for some order as a child for the life around me.
Yes, yes. And I'm sensing that the chaos that you experienced in your life didn't allow for some inner nurturing, there's an unfulfilled longing, perhaps the pain that you carried in your childhood, because your inner life wasn't nurtured by the outer chaos.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm. And I'm wondering if the sadness is an expression of the mourning of that loss coming to the surface.
Exactly what I was thinking. Yeah. It feels like a great mourning for that loss.
And allowing yourself to feel the sadness in the mourning, in my experience, is healing. As you say order, I'm wondering if these words have a connection or resonance. If there's order, there is a sense of restfulness or peace or harmony that you can experience, that everything is okay, that you're safe.
Absolutely.
As a child, I can imagine children, I know from my own inner life, just so much needs a sense of security, knowing that I'm okay and that my environment and my parents are safe and that they uphold me and my well-being. And if it's chaotic, that's just not there.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen. I appreciate your willingness to share. I would love to hear if there's anyone else like to share your experience or ask any question or challenge in this last process. Daryl, notice your hand went up. I'd love to hear what you have to say.
I just wanted to comment on the last process with Kathleen.
Yes.
You know, it kind of caused me to go back to my own experience and desire for what did I want from the other person, knowing that, you know, I can't really change that. But yeah. I kind of hadn't realized that they did that, the follow-through with Kathleen, that I want clarity for myself. And then as you went back to, you know, the inner child, having that same realization that there was no clarity, I didn't know. It was very confusing. So it's really fascinating how, like, our reactivity to our external situation is really pointing the way to where we need to go on an inner work. Thank you. That was helpful. It's also helpful for me for that to witness, you know, that process that you and Kathleen did. That helped, gives me more clarity as
Great.
Well. So thank you.
Yeah, I'm so glad for that clarity, Daryl. And I just want to reiterate the clarity that you shared is that the reactivity from something outside, another person that says or does something or a situation, really points to an inner reactivity, an inner pain, an inner wounding, a pattern that we hold that simply gets re-stimulated by outer circumstances. And I do want to say it's not that we ignore the other person, that we don't engage in connected, authentic dialogue with them. I'm not suggesting we don't do that, but I'm suggesting that the more this inner practice we do, that it can be sourced with a fuller connection with ourselves that we bring to the other person once it's more healed and more transformed. So just wanted to say that. I see that your hand is up, Dee. I would love to hear you, whatever you'd like to share.
I've worked on something that I've tried to work on several times, having to do with being in my office and kind of wedded to the computer and emails and my irritation over that and feeling lack of balance. And I just noticed in doing this process that, again, my attachment to wanting a shift in that behavior has been the way I've approached it. So I'm still not very clear about it, but I had a glimpse of just accepting the irritation and the fact that this is not totally serving me, but not needing to do anything about it. It was bringing some acceptance to that rather than feeling I have to change it. And I'm just hoping that out of that acceptance that some kind of shift will happen. It hasn't yet, but there was a glimpse.
Yeah. Okay, great, Dee. Thanks. I want to ask you a question. I wasn't clear on when you say bringing acceptance to it. Is it accepting the situation, the external situation?
No, accepting my feeling about it.
Yes. Okay. I wasn't clear about that. So it's having an internal acceptance. accepting your inner experience of it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. And I think that one of the points you're making that you said, well, I'm hoping that that then therefore makes a shift in my behavior. And this inner hoping for me is very important for me to pay attention to the nature of it, because it's different. Maybe it's, I heard it as lighter than the attachment of wanting the shift in your behavior. Because my experience is when I'm attached to something, then there's an energy of almost demand and inner pressure I put on myself. There's often a judgment that I hold for myself when I'm attached to something.
I just like the idea of being accepting my, I can't find the word, but accepting my irritation and my whatever, just accepting that's what I'm experiencing. Yay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's what I'm experiencing.
Yeah. And I would just want to add, you don't have to do it right now, but staying connected to that, the principle of this work is, in the experience that you call irritation, there's an energy there. And in that energy, there's a longing for something. There's a longing for a different quality of inner experience that you're longing for. It's also a longing that you want that to be in harmony with your behavior, with your actions.
Yeah. I think the longing is for acceptance, just acceptance of who I am in all my fallibles.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Dee. I'm noticing that we have about less than 3 minutes left for the closing. I'd like to just bring this to a close. And my suggestion is that you practice these exercises on a daily basis, and just to follow your experience. And notice if any questions come up from the practice, any clarity that you're wanting, anything else that could support you, or any other experience that emerges from practicing these processes. Having said that, I feel complete, and I'm really grateful for everybody who is here and present. Thank you for being here, and I look forward to being with you again in a week.